Previously in Series 4.
Ach, our football is as colourless as this weather.
I live in an afterlife that contains nothing but football. But I'm not enjoying the football. I've been starting to wonder whether Hornet Heaven is actually the right place for me.
Blinking flip! It's one crisis after a bleeding number. First a newbie, don't want to come in. Now there's a bloke who's been here for years who wants to quit Hornet Heaven. He wants to end it all.
Hornet Heaven. Series 4, Episode 3. A World Without Beauty. Written by Ollie Wickham. Read by Colin Mace. Earth Season 2016-17. The Hornet Heaven resident who wanted to end it all was searching for an exit where new arrivals entered, in the drab twilight of the lower reaches of Occupation Road. Henry and Bill wanted to help him, so instead of going to the away game at Everton, they followed Lamper down into the gloom. Bill asked,
"Is he in a very bad way, Lamper?"
"Not as bad as he will be if he don't cheer up soon. I'll lamp him one, good and proper."
Now, Lamper, this is a time for compassion, not threats of violence."
"But he's getting right on my tits."
"Lamper, at moments like this, you need to be more sensitive."
"My tits are very sensitive."
Henry intervened and put an avuncular arm around Lamper's shoulders.
"The thing is, Lamper, we need to show a bit more understanding. This is a man who no longer wants to live, or no longer wants to be dead, or something. Either way, this is a man who wants to end his afterlife."
"Well, I suppose when you put it like that..."
"Exactly. It's a terribly serious matter. We need to consider very carefully how we're going to handle the situation."
"Shall I think up some loot and jokes?"
"Perfect."
Soon, in the murk, Henry and Bill saw the outline of a man sitting hunched on the curb, with his head on his knees in despair. Lamper said,
"Here he is. I told him to clear off back to Hornet Heaven proper. I kicked him a few times too. I enjoyed that. But he won't budge. He's your problem now."
Lamper disappeared into the shadows. Henry still couldn't make out who the man was. He went and sat on the curb next to the distressed figure.
"Hello. I'm the father of the club. I'm hoping I can help you."
"Leave me alone. No one can help me. I want out."
Henry recognised the voice immediately.
"I say, is that you, Mike?"
Mike Keane, Watford's manager from the mid-1970s, nodded despondently.
"Yes, it's me. But not for long. I've always been committed to the ideal of beautiful football. And since Walter Mazzari isn't even trying to play attractively, I'd rather not be here. I don't want to live in a world without beauty."
Bill sat down on the curb on the other side of Mike. He said,
"Oh dear, Mike. It must be especially awful for you. You gave us some gorgeous football during your time as manager. Remember Preston?"
A huge sob burst out of Mike Keane.
Oh, sorry.
Henry looked at the downcast former boss and remembered how he and Bill had managed to lift themselves out of their pit of despair after the Sunderland game. He was confident he already had the answer to the problem. He decided to waste no time.
You know, Mike, Bill and I were feeling exactly the same way as you about the tripe we've been watching. And do you know what? The thing that cheered us up was the knowledge that in Hornet Heaven, at least our afterlives aren't tainted by anything to do with Luton. Ah, yes. Oh, dear. Mike? Mike, are you all right?
Mike Keane had slumped forward and was lying on the tarmac in a fetal position. Bill said,
I've just remembered. Mike played over 100 games for Luton before he joined us. That mistake has always rather haunted him.
Ah, bugger.
Mike Keane felt himself being carried up Occupation Road by his arms and legs. The light further up the slope was unusually grey, but Mike felt a greater darkness pressing down on his mind. He'd always believed in beautiful football. In the 1970s, he played with elegance in Watford's midfield, and he'd encouraged the same from his players when he became manager. It wasn't about aesthetics. It was about principle. Any team could play ugly football. A good team should always reach for a higher plane. The darkness that was pressing down on his mind was that Watford were a good team, but weren't playing like a good team. Technically, the squad contained better players than the club had ever possessed, but their attacking football was lumpy-humpy. It hurt the eyes and the soul. And now he was being carried back to the heart of Hornet Heaven to be made to watch more of it. He tried to kick out, to free himself, but he just didn't have the strength. In the atrium, Bill and Henry laid the former manager down on one of the yellow leather sofas. They stepped back and watched him try to doze. Bill said, "The current dissatisfaction with the head coach can't be helping him either. All the shouts of Mazzari out must bring back very painful memories. When he was manager, Watford fans chanted for his dismissal. Goodness, I remember that. How did it go? Keane out! Keane out! That was great fun." Mike Keane's limbs began twitching helplessly. Bill scolded Henry for his insensitivity and knelt down next to Mike. He held Mike's hand.
"I'm so sorry to see you like this, Mike. Perhaps we should take you to tonight's game at Everton in the hope that Watford's performance will give you reason for living."
Henry interrupted.
Fat chance.
Mike just shook his head weakly and murmured,
"I can't go on as a Watford fan."
Bill patted Mike's hand and wondered how they could help him. Merely bringing him back up to the atrium clearly wasn't going to be enough. Bill got to his feet. He announced to Henry,
"Right, this man needs treatment. As a matter of urgency, he needs a specialist." "Right, of course, but what kind of specialist?"
Bill knew exactly who could help Mike. He said,
"This is another job for Roy in IT."
Henry and Bill carried Mike Keane by the arms and legs again. They headed down through the strangely dim light of Occupation Road towards Bill's old hut.
"You know, I'm very glad I rebuilt your hut, Bill,"
It's proved awfully useful. First a confessional, then an IMAX cinema, and now an emergency clinic.
Kelly, the recent arrival in Hornet Heaven, was waiting for them at the hut. She put up a sign on the porter cabin door. The sign had a medical-looking symbol on it, a red cross on a yellow background. This caused a brief argument between Henry and Bill about whether the cross should have been red or black.
Kelly said, "Don't squabble, boys. Roy says Mike's treatment is ready. I hope it works. The man who gave Watford fans that Preston game in 1974-75 doesn't deserve to be suffering like this."
Kelly left, and Henry and Bill carried Mike into the hut. The former manager seemed barely conscious. They stretched Mike out on a trolley. Bill said gently, "We're gonna make you feel well again, Mike." Mike lay on his back and nodded feebly. Henry and Bill rolled the trolley backwards until Mike's head was inside a machine that looked just like the MRI scanner at Watford General Hospital.
"Just open your eyes a little and look straight up."
Henry gave a signal to Roy through his microphone, and footage started to play on the curved surface above Mike's head. Mike peered at it, dead-eyed. There was snow around the edge of the Vicarage Road pitch. Alman Abdi brought the ball down in Watford's half and played it forward to Fernando Forestieri on the halfway line. Fessy touched it back to Jonathan Hogg, and Hogg returned it to Fessy. Fessy took the ball towards the Rouse stand and pushed it out to Lloyd Doyley. Doyley moved it on to Marco Cassetti on the touchline. Cassetti played it first time square to Fessy, who dummied it for Christian Bertocchio. Bertocchio exchanged swift passes twice with Alman Abdi back and forth. Then, as Bertocchio sprinted forward, Abdi passed forward to Fessy, who let the ball run on to Cassetti again, further up the touchline. Cassetti curled the ball deliciously along the ground into the path of Bertocchio on the edge of the box. Bertocchio, with an exquisite touch, redirected the ball into the Huddersfield goal, just inside the far post. Mike's eyelids flickered. The slightest of sparkles began to light his eyes. The footage, on loop, now showed Abdi bringing the ball down again at the start of the move. Henry and Bill watched Mike. Bill murmured,
"It's working. The acute treatment is working."
Mike watched the goal, time and time again. Soon, his eyes were shiny. He was sighing with pleasure at the beauty of what he was watching. Henry, the father of the club, watched the former manager's reaction. He found himself welling up. Thanks to a timely emergency intervention, Mike Keane was back from the brink. On the Sunday, for some peace and quiet after so much stress recently, Henry headed to the Sensory Room in the northeast corner of the stadium. When he arrived, the main section overlooking the pitch was empty, but there was someone in the calming area. It was Freddie Sargent. Henry found his old teammate from the 1880s reclining on a yellow beanbag, massaging his temples and gazing silently at a wall projection of an aquarium.
"Hello, Freddie."
Freddie looked a bit unsettled by the interruption. He diverted his attention to beads of air rising up a bubble tube.
"Been to any decent games recently?"
Freddie, like many fans, felt that Watford didn't really do decent games anymore. He started to look cross. He picked up a yellow cushion in the shape of Harry the Hornet's face and started stroking it.
"Good idea, old son. I think we could all do with a bit of comfort.
especially after Friday's toothless defeat at Everton.
Freddy could stand it no longer.
Gah! For God's sake, Henry, shut up about the football. I'm trying to stay calm.
Oh, dear. Sorry, Freddy. Has something been getting your goat?
Not something. Someone. Walter Bloody Mazzari. He totally winds me up. Doesn't speak English. Doesn't wave to the fans.
Ah, I see. Well, you're probably wise to spend time in here trying to restore your inner peace. I mean, Walter has led us to 6 away defeats in a row.
The statistic incensed Freddy.
He punched Harry the Hornet's face.
Gah! I hate Mazzari. I just hate him.
Oh, dear, Freddy. Hate's a strong emotion. Are you sure?
I can't help it. It's how I feel.
Freddy took a few deep breaths. Right. Leave me alone. I'm going to try and centre myself by contemplating the glitter ball on the ceiling there.
As Freddy settled back into his beanbag, hugging the Harry the Hornet cushion, Henry's attention was drawn by the changing coloured lights that were embedded in the fibre optic carpet. The way they were fading in and fading out reminded him of Etienne Capoue. He said,
I suppose the buck does have to stop with Walter. After all, we haven't even scored a goal in the last 6 away games. In fact, Bill's young assistant, Derek, calculated that we've been goalless for 10 hours and 17 minutes of football away from home. He said that, mathematically, at the current rate, we won't score for the rest of eternity.
The extra statistics made Freddy lose all control.
Mazzari out! Mazzari out!
At the end of the outburst, Freddy buried his face into Harry the Hornet's and let out a muffled whimper. Henry watched. He didn't know what to do. He patted Freddy on the shoulder and said,
Good man, Freddy. Good man. Best try and keep a lid on it, old son.
Awkwardly, he sidled backwards out of the calming area. When he turned, he bumped into someone. It was Lamper.
Oi, I ought to stick one on you.
What? Why?
Hiding in here when you're needed.
I'm not hiding. What's happened now?
It's that bleeding Mike Keane again. He wants to leave Hornet Heaven. Again.
Henry left Freddy Sargent in the calming area and returned to the nether regions of Occupation Road. This time, in the gloom, Mike Keane looked totally wired. His hands had developed a tremor. His pupils were dilated. Henry said,
Lummy, Bill. What's happened to the man?
Bill had taken it upon himself to supervise Mike, trying to keep the former manager safe.
I think we gave him 2 higher dose of the emergency treatment in my hut. He's become addicted to Zola's football.
Ah, weren't we all? For a short, glorious while.
Ever since the treatment, he spent the whole time watching every single Zola match back to back. Now he can't get enough.
Well, it was rather Moorish.
Mike came over to Henry. He seized
Henry's lapels and said,
"More Zola. I need more Zola."
Mike let go and went off to rattle a stretch of rusty fencing in his search for the exit.
"Well, this is a very poor show, I must say. It's terribly irresponsible of Mike to binge on so much Zola in such a short period."
"I agree, Henry. Mike may well have strong principles about beautiful football, but excessive indulgence in it, out of context, is mind-altering. It makes you forget that football has to meet objectives, and Zola didn't succeed in getting us promoted from the Championship. The football wasn't up to its task."
"But I don't understand why Mike's trying to leave Hornet Heaven. There's plenty of delicious Zola behind the ancient turnstile."
Mike was now delving through brambles, mumbling to himself,
"Fresh Zola. I must have fresh Zola."
He's heard Gianfranco's been at Birmingham City this season. So he wants to go to their heaven.
"Golly. Are you sure a club like Birmingham would have a heaven?"
"No idea.
If it does, young Derek suggested it would be called Blue Nose Bliss."
Henry watched as Mike continued showing all the signs of addiction to a drug as powerful as Zola's football. Unusual excitement, euphoria, and intense cravings. Henry felt a little jealous that none of these sensations had been available to Watford fans under Walter Mazzari. Attractive football had been a strictly controlled substance.
"Right then, Mike clearly needs help. Any ideas?"
"I'm going to refer him to a specialist."
"Oh, golly. I hope you don't mean Roy in IT again. Success can't be achieved by simply repeating something that hasn't worked. Did watching A.D. Boothroyd's hoofball teach you nothing?"
"I mean a different specialist, Henry. This is a job for someone who knows all about addiction. We need a man who used to stop the team coach at a pub so he could get a drink. A man who was sacked for misappropriating club monies to fund his gambling."
"My goodness, Bill, you're right. This is a job for Neil McBain."
Henry found Neil McBain in the atrium. He was encouraged when Watford's manager from the 1930s and 1950s agreed to help. Henry said,
"You know all about addiction, McBain. What's the secret of getting someone like Mike to pull himself together?"
"Well, I'm old school, Henry. I believe in tough love."
"Ah, I've never quite understood that phrase. What does it mean?"
"Tough love means harsh treatment. That's good for someone in the long run because there's love behind it."
"How interesting. Harsh treatment seems to be Walter Mazzari's management style. Maybe it'll prove good for the players in the long run."
"I said there has to be love behind it."
"Ah, good point."
Very soon, Mike Keane found himself following Neil McBain along Occupation Road towards the ancient turnstile.
"You got to help me, McBain. I live for beautiful football. I need another fix."
"Stick with me, Mike, and I'll sort you out."
"Sort me out with some Zola? Oh, thank you. I love you, man."
"Ah, get off me. I mean, sort you out once and for all. I've chosen a game for us to go to from 1974-75.
Mike's eyes widened in anticipation.
"At home to Preston? Well, that's serious stash."
McBain took Mike Keane through the ancient turnstile. They arrived on the night of Tuesday, April the 29th, 1975.
"Not Preston. Walsall, at home. The final game of the season."
Mike's eyes hollowed in horror.
But
But that's the night we were relegated into the bottom division. Come on, you need to see this as a harsh lesson you need to learn about beautiful football.
Mike watched Watford line up against Walsall under the floodlights. Mike recalled the stakes. All Watford needed to do was win, and they'd stay up. He suddenly felt sober. Watford were in their mid-1970s kit, yellow shirts with two black vertical stripes running down from the left shoulder. Mike thought the kit looked extremely stylish, but he couldn't remember how stylishly the team had played in tonight's 3-2 defeat. He'd never been back to find out. Now he was here, though. He hoped to see that his team had remained a credit to his footballing principles. He followed McBain to the Vicarage Road terrace. As the match kicked off, he looked around. The fans looked anxious, fearful. He listened to what they were shouting. It was a single game that could save Watford from relegation, and they weren't baying for beautiful football. They were yelling for effort and commitment. Mike dreaded to think what that might make the football look like. After a while, Walsall took the lead. Mike winced. He said to McBain, "I know we went down, but we had players capable of some fantastic stuff. Look at them out there. Dennis Bond, Stuart Scullion, Bobby Downs, and tell me, Mike, did their beautiful football keep us in the division?" Mike knew it was a rhetorical question, but he couldn't help answering. "It should have done." As soon as the words left his lips, he began to recognise the state of denial he'd been in for the 42 years since tonight's events. As the match progressed, Watford couldn't seem to get a foothold in the game. The fans around Mike seemed to get more and more anxious as relegation loomed larger. They shouted for the players to get the ball into the box. Mike shook his head sadly. "I wanted us to keep trying to play beautiful football." This seemed to annoy McBain.
"Ach, Mike, that's time to feast, Fox. The problem wasn't prettiness. The problem was defending."
"I know, but listen to me. Here's the truth. If you'd stopped one of Preston's two goals the previous Tuesday and just one of Walsall's three tonight, Watford would have got two more points and stayed up. Preventing two goals was all it would have taken, however ugly it might have looked."
Mike stared down at the terrace, processing this. McBain finished by saying,
"Beautiful football is never the answer in a survival situation."
Mike Keane lifted his eyes to the night sky. He knew, deep down, that what McBain was saying was true. It was just that, for all of his footballing life and afterlife, he hadn't wanted it to be true. Mike turned to leave.
"Oh, no, you don't. You're staying. You need to experience the evening in full for your own good."
When the final whistle went, Watford were relegated to Division 4. Back in 1975, Mike hadn't hung around to see what had happened. Now, from the terrace, he saw there was a pitch invasion. Fans wearing flared trousers and platform shoes strode onto the pitch, fists clenched, eyes blazing. They were chanting, "Keane out." This time, when he heard the chant, Mike didn't twitch helplessly. Instead, he nodded. At last, he recognised that the relegation had been his fault. He'd been trying to play the wrong kind of football. He should have played whatever kind of football might have stopped this happening.
he'd got it terribly wrong. Anything was better than the pain of Watford being relegated. And anything included Walter Mazzari's football in 2017. Two days later, after Watford's final away defeat of the season at Chelsea, Henry Grover and Bill Mainwood were relaxing on the yellow leather sofas in the atrium. Mike Keane came and sat down with them. Henry said,
"Ah, Mike, I hear McBain did an excellent job with you."
"He did. He taught me that we can't always expect to see beautiful football. There's a reason Walter has had us playing the lumpy-humpy stuff.
So from now on, can we expect to hear you shouting Mazzari in?"
"I don't know about that. But it did make me think something that Freddie Sargent isn't thinking when he shouts Mazzari out. I'm thinking Walter Mazzari is clearly a better coach than me." Bill asked, "And how are things now, Mike? Are you bearing up?"
"I went to Stamford Bridge. We played some decent stuff for once. Jan Mat's dribble into the box for his goal was superb."
"It must have reminded you of Stuart Scullion against Preston."
"It didn't. I've learned not to idealise beautiful football anymore. The most important thing about the trip to Chelsea was discovering that we were mathematically safe from relegation. We've survived in the Premier League again, which means that Walter's unadventurous approach was justified. It did its job."
Henry and Bill were both pleased to hear that Mike's new perspective had allowed him to find a way out of the misery he'd been in. Bill said, "So, are you planning to stay in Hornet Heaven now?"
"You're not going to do what so many Watford fans did at games this season, and leave early?"
"I'm sticking with it. The summer's nearly here, and I'm hoping we can all wipe the slate clean. I think we need to accept that Mazzari did what he had to do to keep us in the Premier League for only the second time ever, and get ready to go again next season."
Henry and Bill both nodded. After so many recent troubles, their own crisis, Kelly's doubts and Mike's despair, they were optimistic that everyone in Hornet Heaven would now be much more emotionally stable. Suddenly, though, they heard Derek Garston running into the atrium.
"Sir, and Mr. Grover, sir! Sir, and Mr. Grover, sir!"
Bill said, "Goodness, young man, what's going on?"
"It's an emergency, sir! One of the residents is on the roof of the Sir Elton John stand, sir! I'm frightened! He's going to jump!"
End of episode 3. The story continues in series 4, episode 4. One Man Alone. Hornet Heaven was created and written by Watford fan Ollie Wicken. It was read by Watford fan Colin Mace. It was produced by Watford fan John Mooney. Music by Watford fans Steve Joy and Jeff Wicken.